Can you look for that intelligence and find it?
I don't think so.
Let's see. Go on.
We do the more trusted job.
Look, watch it, please. Mm-hmm. Watch his toes, particularly. His fingers. If you laugh, he's holding up the roof.
If he laughs, why does it collapse?
Because the attention is completely diverted. And so even the
intelligence is not diverted. So it's got something to do with attention.
Yes, right. If the attention is not diverted, then the intelligence can function without too much panic. You're not doing it at all. Only that intelligence can do it. It is totally non-volitional.
But he could probably train himself, say, not to move his feet or to do something different.
Mm-hmm. He can. He can hand himself over completely to that intelligence, and even then it will shake. Tightrope walkers, they carry a stick. That is to camouflage and fool the audience. And you are looking at the whole thing done, the whole stick dancing. It's not the whole stick dancing. It's him that is dancing. He doesn't want you to know that. It's not possible. He can probably develop a little more muscular power or something like that and make it less difficult. That's possible. But then he has not reached his own maximum. No?
So training has a limit.
Right, that's all. Everyone has a limit. My limit is different from his limit. We are only asking that person, the trained man, the man who walked over the Fifth Avenue, New York, he can probably walk without batting an eyelid on the over that wire. But I would tell him, walk on your toes. That is easy for you. Walk on your toes, then the whole thing will start again. It is there, and it springs into action, and only it knows what to do and when. And that is complete, totally beyond your mind, beyond the me.
So the I can't be aware of it, you mean?
Mm-mm.
I can't.
You're not aware of it at all. The I can merely surrender itself, keep quiet, push itself out of the way of this intelligence. Which is what the baby does without knowing. Sort of, it's not doing it. It happens in the case of the baby, and therefore, when the baby falls, it falls completely, like a rag doll, and it's not injured. There's no resistance. In the case of the baby, the mind performs its own function, but it does not come and interfere in the functioning of this intelligence. Yes, you've seen that.
All this business about vitamins and whatnot, can the body more or less correct the elements that you put into
yes,
it and
yes.
make its own harmony of protein and whatnot?
Up to your point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if the food is completely denatured, remember that we have messed up the whole thing already. If the food is completely denatured, then the body struggles to adjust it. If it does not, then it starts the same intelligence. Please follow this a bit carefully. You might understand something interesting. I am denying this body certain vitamins and denying the body even those materials with which the body could manufacture those vitamins. And then it says, all right, the food is deficient in something, completely, totally, it's absent. I cannot even manufacture vitamin A that is necessary. And it says, all right, in the absence of this, it looks around, which is the dispensable part of the body. Looks around. The knees are the weakest. They are going in any case. Let them go now. So the weakest body starts giving out. And you call it weak. The intelligence does not call it weak at all. It just says, let us economize on what the available energy. And since, for instance, the heart is important to keep going, the lungs are important, they have to be kept going, and the brain is important, it has to be kept going. So I'll provide energy for all this. The non-essential services are switched off. Then you get panic and you think it is disease. And the thing goes slower and slower, and the whole thing functions slower and slower and slower. Then it says, well, you know, the fellow is still sticking some food into the stomach, but it's not of much use. I cannot manufacture any vitamins, nothing. No balancing is possible in this body, so let it go. I'll make a new body. And that you call death. The first, which was a very healthy process, very intelligent process, you called sickness. And the second, which was even more brilliant, you called death.
Arthritis is a good example of that.
What about fasting? Now, you mentioned fasting and meditation in one of the readings yesterday. Is your body depleted at all, or your mental capacity, practice of yoga?
I didn't get that last bit.
Is your mental capacity limited at all when you enter fast?
The mental capacity, no. I've not done
what
that.
What are the advantages and disadvantages?
In fasting, yes. Most are advantages, provided the fasting itself is done a bit more intelligently than sort of, you know, repressively. Fasting is different from starving, yes? If you starve the body, then what lives in the body may decide that it's not necessary, this body is not necessary. I can do without. It's so weak that it's just as well I leave it. Right? But if you fast intelligently, it's always productive of something good. The body is cleansed. The mind is made clearer. Definitely.
So then it makes up for vitamins and things that
aren't. Aha, that's a different story. I don't think that'll happen. Fasting merely eliminates toxins, whether in the body or in brain cells. When the toxins in the brain cells are eliminated, then there is clarity of thinking. When the toxins in the cells of the rest of the body are eliminated, then there is greater energy, more energy. That's all. And since that energy is not utilized for physical activity, because either the limbs are. It is more psychological than logical.
So then short fasts are beneficial.
Very.
How short is short?
How short is short? 1 day's fast is normal, it's nothing. It's not serious at all. 3 to 10 days is a short fast. And something which is very good.
That's just water.
Mm-hmm. Just water is preferable, they say. Mm-hmm. I have not done that. I usually take some black tea or something.
That's a good fast. What's a good fast?
Your own system must decide.
So, is it considered a fast when you have just fruit juices? Is it orange juice? Grape juice?
I suppose it is faster than the other ones.
It's all right, but you're making it. Don't fuck the fast, go slow.
It's better than all the other stuff that we eat.
It's hard for me to imagine that if I'm suffering physical pain, that if I just say, well, that pain is a part of me, and I don't have to get rid of it.
Part of me,
I won't feel it anymore. Is it true? I won't feel it. Eventually, wouldn't feel it.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't struggle against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. Sleep, isn't it? Sleep teaches me that lesson. In sleep, I am not struggling with the pain, and I don't feel it. Mm-hmm. Yet, if you listen to yourself saying that, in phrasing it in some other way, well, you know, I have to accept it. You're not accepting it. It is that foolish struggle, right? If I allow the system to take care of it, it doesn't hurt, it doesn't pain. Not as though I'm the only one in the world who is suffering from this. The discomfort is there. The discomfort is there as a message. The body intelligence wants to communicate with me. Tell me. Look out. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But you don't have to add to that by the mental
suffering. That's it.
Suffering.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. It's very similar to natural childbirth.
Hmm?
It's very similar to natural childbirth.
Yeah,
that you interpret it as pain, it will hurt, but
yeah.
If you interpret it as stretching, then it's just stretch,
that,
and you concentrate on your breath, and you can get through it very easily.
And so she had the second child, the first one too?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. One can almost enjoy it, within limits. No, I'm not saying that it's possible to do it all the way through. One can almost enjoy a headache. Yeah. A mild headache, not exactly what she said.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. But first of all, you must be prepared not to struggle against it, not to fight it. And you lie down, or sit, lie down is better perhaps. And you say, oh my God. It almost looks as though there is a lovely, what is it, band? Highland band, is it? What is it? No. Scottish? Bagpipe. Huh? Yeah, right. You know the skirted people? It looks as though this is quite a good band of them. And you begin to enjoy it. Then you say, my God, it's even rhythmic. Even in pain, there is a rhythm. It's not it's not chaotic at all. It's beautiful. It's like first-class music.
You just have to learn how to appreciate it. You just have to learn to appreciate it for what it is.
Yes. And then, well, if you can do this, and if you are used to this mantra, repeating your mantra, you can repeat your mantra, sort of aligning it to that rhythm. So instead of this man sitting there and playing the drum, someone here is playing the drum, and you are merely saying Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya, and then you go to sleep. You wake up, there is no headache. Unfortunately, because you can't do any Om Namah Shivaya anymore. This is true. Again, within limits. Just as, for instance, our friend said, fasting. If you went on fasting, is very good. If you went on fasting because it is good for 200 days,
yeah.
Then he'll have very, very long life and very healthy life next time.
Yeah. People here say a lot of the time, like you say, oh, I'm coming down with a cold or something like that. They don't give strength to it, like if you
They're living in the guest room, yes?
Yeah.
If they have a cold, they come down, actually.
So the idea is that if you... If you acknowledge a sickness, that it's giving a more of a strength to it, like if you say I'm tired, then that's giving strength to that. And so the idea seems to be that by not doing that, that then those things might go away. Do you know what I'm talking about? Have you heard some people, yogis, talk that way?
I never heard anybody do that. Mm.
Not to dwell on it.
Hmm?
Well, it's not to dwell on it, I can understand, but I get mixed up on this other thing about it's not acknowledging it, really. It's not giving it an existence. The idea, I suppose, that thought is power. So if you put it in your thought, I'm coming down with the flu, that would be, and then someone
that's where we started. I am coming down with the flu is unreality. That is what thought does.
My nose is...
Just a moment.
Okay.
I am coming down with the flu is... I may catch a flu. I may have a temperature tomorrow. That's not real at all. That the yogi has no time for. There is something. What is? He says, sore throat, I tell April, and she gives me... what did you say? Loyalty. Loyalty. She makes a brew of loyalty and gives it to me, and it's gone. That's all.
A brew of boil tea.
Very good.
You take over.
It is that what may happen. What may happen is not a reality at all. So, if you eliminate that, 80% of the headache is gone.
How about with something like fatigue or tiredness?
Fatigue is there. Even in that fatigue, about 80% of all our troubles are these mays and may not and premonitions and visions and hallucinations, all sorts of things. What is the truth? The reality is so little.
But even that can be changed, like that story of yours when you were so tired and you'd been working the whole night and you suddenly realized, ah, no.
No, that's a different thing.
She's talking about that by sheer willpower, you could just say, I'm tired, but I'm not going to accept this tiredness. It's not that.
And it's not willpower. Unfortunately, I don't know if you remember what she's talking about.
Yeah.
It is not the willpower at all that works it. It is something beyond that willpower.
So perhaps by not accepting that you're tired, that other thing
you
will be given.
You cannot have help from accepting that you're... You don't have to accept.
Yeah.
The body says, I'm fatigued. The body says, I'm fatigued and it needs rest. It is possible for something else to eliminate that fatigue. Like the story that she's referring to. You forget something or your child cries, then you get up and run. That extra energy is stored somewhere and adrenaline makes it, releases it into the bloodstream. How that happens, I do not know. How that happened, I does not know.
And yet I makes the, there's a thought which says, well, I want to stay awake longer.
I have to.
In that context that Avril was referring to, the I is made to say so.
By the circumstances, the situation?
By something, something that sprang up. The whole thing was is like a lightning, and it's lightning that strikes. Something deep within, my God, I've forgotten this. The I merely says, I've forgotten this. The I which said a minute ago, I'm fatigued, I want to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I see the body is fatigued and it needs sleep. Then suddenly, if you want to use the word, the subconscious mind throws up something which had been forgotten,
mm-hmm.
which is important.
Mm-hmm.
And the I merely sees this. And it is seized with some kind of panic and the energy flows. The whole operation is beyond the me, beyond the ego sense.
Mm.
That energy, which is inexhaustible and which can cancel out fatigue or any sort of illness, is beyond the me. And that is where you rest in sleep. That is there, isn't it? Though your body is fatigued, even your brain cells may be fatigued. When you are sleeping, you are still there. Some part of your brain, what is it called? They called it something in that article there. The brain stem, wasn't it? It is awake all through your sleep. It is a, according to them, it is a cerebral cortex that is asleep. That is constantly awake, and even so, this energy that is there in the body is also constantly awake. It never sleeps. That the Kundalini is asleep and it's a bit too awake, and it's sort of, it's a figure of speech. Don't take it literally.
Well, what does it mean being coiled at the base of the spine, like dormant?
That is a figure of speech. Sort of how to meditate upon it, how to concentrate your attention upon it. And that is also made available to the rest of the body, to the conscious mind and the physical body, by something beyond the me. And so, it is perhaps possible for the yogis to rest free of the me.
That's meditation.
That's meditation, obviously. To rest free of the me. And if in that state, what has to happen will happen. Huh? Right? In that state, what has to happen will happen. There is one slight suggestion of just a little bit of mischief there, which has done a lot of havoc. The yogi who transcends the me the me which is the cause of suffering, which is the cause of pain, which is the cause of illness, which is the cause of fatigue and all the rest of it. You following that? The me is the cause of suffering, the me is the cause of pain, the me is the cause of ulcers, disease, death, and the yogi goes beyond the me. What suggests to you immediately? And therefore, he must live forever. And if the yogi is terribly anxious to live forever in the body, he is not gone beyond the me. It's a dreadful double-edged sword. It cuts both ways.
When you go beyond
What does it matter what the body does? If the body is fatigued, let it sleep. Why do you want to look for some kind of extraordinary, you know, that so she might say, ah, look at the Swami, he doesn't get tired at all. Or look at his body, he died 3 months ago, still it is fresh. You understand me? If the yogi has really gone beyond me, why is he so terribly worried about what state the body is in? If there is some cancer, let it be there. Why does he want to prove that because I have transcended the me, this body, because I have transcended the me, my body is in the perfect health? See, that is the catch there.
So are you saying that when you transcend the me still exists on this level, but you're up here?
I'm afraid. that's not right. If I have truly
then it's completely gone.
If I have truly transcended me, right, even that is defective statement, yes? When the me has been completely transcended, what is?
But for other people observing you, would there still be anything you'd like?
They observe what they want to observe, no?
So
it's in them. Is that clear? For instance, they observe the Swami who, the body who, but that is sick. Between them there is a big difference of opinion. One says, hey, look at him. He pretended to be holy, holy. He is, look at the way he is suffering. Huh?
Yeah,
and the other one says, my God, he is so great that he doesn't care what happens to the body. He has transcended all, everything. And so what they see in that yogi's body is what they want to see.
Mm-hmm. How about personality? Can you relate that to the same thing? Like a supposed yogi who has a very arrogant personality, so to speak, and some people interpret that as being arrogant and pompous, and other people don't see it at all. They just think that he's a really beautiful person.
That is precisely why that is not a topic for discussion at all. Only that person knows, if at all it's possible to know, that there is no me in me.
That person.
That there is liberation. Mm-hmm. Huh? Only that person will know. If one is liberated or not liberated, only one will know. And how will he know? By the absence of any confusion. It is not as though that person will have some kind of light burning in his throat. No. By the total absence of any confusion, there is total absence of all confusion. And therefore, as far as he is concerned, there is nothing. And the observers, they observe in him what they want to observe or what they hate to observe. That's a beautiful statement in the Bhagavad Gita, the last chapter. Arjuna does not say, I have attained enlightenment, I have seen golden light. He only says, Nashto moha hasmasad lapta. My delusion is gone. I was deluded and that delusion is gone. I had a pot full of questions and dilemma, and that is gone. And the mind is clear. The mind is clear, there is light on the path of my life, and there is enlightenment. I am not carrying a big load. I feel light. That's all.
Would no pain be felt by the yogi here?
The yogi doesn't feel any pain, but the mind and the body may feel pain. In other words, if you are a great yogi or a sage, enlightened, liberated sage, if someone pokes a needle in that foot, those eyes may shed tears and that throat might howl.
But I would be watching it.
There is no eye.
Well, that which is.
That which is. You see everywhere. It's in that needle, it's in that it's in everything.
Get back to that same spot. It's been so hard to.
Hmm? Right? No. The whole our problem has always been that we, the ignorant, set the standard for the behavior of the enlightened. How he should behave and what he should do.
Gamaya, Tamasoma, Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma, Samiramaya.